This week, I'm joined by one of Ireland's best-known content creators, Caoimhe McGinley. Many of you will know Caoimhe from the Big Hill House on Instagram, but behind the beautiful home and social media posts is a woman who has overcome incredible heartbreak. In this honest conversation, Caoimhe opens up about the breakdown of her marriage, navigating divorce in the public eye, raising her four children, and the devastating miscarriage at almost 17 weeks pregnant. For the first time publicly, she also shares the story of a defamation case that she says became one of the lowest points of her life, how it affected her personally and professionally, and why she has chosen to speak about it now. This is a conversation about resilience, hope, and proving that no matter what life throws at you, you can come back stronger. If this story resonates with you, please leave a comment and hit that subscribe button. It genuinely really helps. And as always, this episode is proudly sponsored by ADHD Now, the online clinic transforming ADHD assessment and care across Ireland. If you are seeking an ADHD assessment or support, visit ADHDnow.com today. This is The Comeback with Caoimhe McGinley. Caoimhe, thank you so much for joining me, coming all the way down from County Tyrone. We met a couple of weeks ago at the Canela Nights by Canela Lane. Wild evening it was. And you were on stage, we were both on stage together on a panel. And I think I would have seen you on your Instagram. Like, you're very open on your Instagram, but you got very vulnerable on stage.
Yeah.
And I think you probably shocked yourself that evening, did you?
Yeah. I block a lot out to get through my days, and then it's only whenever you're sitting in a position like that. And Sienna had asked me to talk about, you know, supporting women. Mm-hmm. And it does get me. It's women that have gotten me through the last 3 years. So it's only when you're sitting in a room with women that I suppose you feel safe enough to open up like that.
Before you were speaking, there was Julie, the MC, was like, shh. But when you spoke, she didn't need to do that because you couldn't hear a penny drop, and people were so invested in you. And people love vulnerability.
Yeah.
They absolutely love it because you're just showing that you're like everyone else going through this.
Yeah, it's been hard navigating a divorce with public presence, for sure. And there's no guidebook on it. No. I've just had to, I suppose, use everything I've learned over my years of travelling and my parents and how they've raised me to cope with it all.
Yeah.
And to manage it. But yeah, I suppose it's not easy to talk about. It was a very massive part of my life. And of course, then it's my job to be online. So I couldn't not be online because I have four small children to support. So I had to find a way to, I suppose, show that vulnerability while still keeping as much as I could private.
Yeah. And we're going to get to all how it all came about on Instagram. The Big Hill House is your page and everything that's happened to you, because there's been many highs and many, many lows. But for people who might not know Caoimhe, can you tell me where you grew up and what it was like?
Yeah, I grew up on my dad's farm in County Tyrone. He was a dairy farmer. So there's no rest for the wicked. That's what we grew up with, being dragged out of a bed most weekend mornings to either collect eggs when we used to have the hens, and then in later years in the dairy farming. So my brother and sister were definitely better at helping out on the farm. I was always more inclined to be off gallivanting. So it was a lovely way to grow up, though, the core childhood memories that we have from it, and the work ethic, I suppose, that's where I get it from, seeing my parents and what they didn't have easy years either, and we were together through all of that, and the pressure and financial pressure of dairy farming back in those days, you know. So they were resilient, and I suppose that's where I've learned my resilience from. So.
And is that why you're kind of probably still very close to your parents now?
Yeah,
as well?
I lived away for 15 years, so we moved home just before COVID, and then moved in with my parents for 3 years with three kids and another one on the way. And I got time back with them that, you know, when the world stopped, and it was just an incredible time we'll always look back on fondly, having the grandkids in the house. It was chaos and manic at times, but it was so nice with having nowhere to be, and just getting 15 years back nearly of being away and having that time with them.
So. Do you feel like you got to know your parents all over again?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Seeing them as grandparents, they're just incredible grandparents. It's a joy to watch. I actually had that conversation last week with someone. Grandparents teach our children things that we could never teach them, yeah. you know. And I couldn't do what I do without them. And I'm so lucky. And I know the Big Hill House won't be the Big Hill House or feel the Big Hill House to me. There will be a day that that comes, you know.
Aww.
So I'm there for now and I know that's where I need to be. But and I hope I always have it as a base for them. It's on hard fought family land. And I would like to think that it'll always be somewhere we'll go home to. But I don't know if I'll be there forever.
Really just kind of think you might.
It just, I'm home 7 years now, just passed this week, and I've always itchy feet. I just don't feel like Tyrone is where I belong.
Do you think Ireland is where you belong, or is it somewhere else?
I love just coming back to Ireland for like a month, but I just, the weather kills me here. Like, I'm a hot country girl, and I just think there's an easier way of life and a better standard of living elsewhere. And I think that would be my goal, to still have the house to come home to, but definitely live most of my time outside of Ireland.
Tell me then where you went to secondary school. What was that like?
Secondary school had its ups and downs. Spoke about that recently on another podcast. First time I've actually really spoke about it. I was bullied in secondary school, and it's the reason why I left and went travelling. So it's part of my story. And, you know, I don't have any regrets in life. I think everything that I've come through and went through is part of my journey and has made me who I am today. So, yeah, I moved then to for 2 years to an all-girls school. Still have good friends from that, but that wasn't easy either. And then that's why I made the choice to get away from the north and head south to Dublin for college. So,
and what did you do in college?
Went to UCD and I'd done social science for 3 years, sociology and geography, with the hope of eventually being a secondary school teacher back then. Ended up not doing that at all, and went to the Middle East then after final year in uni.
And did you do TEFL or Teaching English as Foreign Language?
I done my PGCE through University of Sunderland overseas programme, and I was able to teach there without a teaching degree. You just need your initial university degree to get started. Now it's different. They've changed the rules and things, but I done it through in Qatar through the University of Sunderland.
And what year were you in Qatar?
2007.
So that would have been still very, wouldn't have been what we see now after the World Cup. Obviously, it's completely different now. What was it like back then?
Oh, like,
what? Yeah, I reckon so, yeah.
Yeah. There were seven of us, like 2 girls from America, 2 from Dublin that I went over with. Then we met 2 more Irish, but we met a great, great group of Irish guys and the rugby club. We played rugby, and there was 1 rugby club, 1 Irish bar. And now it's so different now, you know. But yeah, it was definitely a culture shock.
And could you drink in the bar then? Did they have alcohol then?
All day drinking Fridays were a thing. Weekends used to be Friday, Saturday. It was the wildest 2 years of my life in Qatar. You wouldn't think it, you know, but it's the people that make it.
Yeah.
And the parties in the villa, the lads' villa, we're all good friends and we all used to go back there after the rugby club.
And when you were in Qatar, did you feel like, oh, this is the life for me, this is the kind of lifestyle that I want, I belong somewhere like this?
Yeah, I loved it. I played rugby, ladies rugby, to, I suppose, sports such a social thing anywhere you go in the world. We got to travel around the Middle East with that, got to go to Kuwait, Dubai, Sharjah. My parents came over to visit me both years that we were there. Then with the girls, I got to travel to Goa in India. Went to the Dead Sea in Jordan. It's a great base for travelling and seeing that part of the world. So, yes, I loved teaching and I loved the weekends off and I loved the holidays that we got. So I knew, I had a feeling. I knew, I'd done a J1 through college in America when I went to America 2 years in a row. I knew that first year when I went to San Diego that I just was born to be away.
Born to travel.
Born in the wrong country.
Yeah, like so many other Irish people think the same. You ended up then in Australia.
Went to Australia then, yeah.
And you met someone.
Yeah, I did. Fell in love.
Yeah.
I remember the night I rang my mum to tell her. It was the night I met him. I sort of knew then.
You knew from the...
Yeah, I would say so. I rang my mum. I was in PJ O'Reilly's in Melbourne. And I said, I met a lovely guy and I'm going to marry him.
What did your mum say?
She laughed on the phone.
Yeah.
He was so handsome. Such a rogue.
Yeah.
Travelled the world. I thought I had travelled until I saw his passport. So
when you met him, did you feel like, okay, this is, you know, I'm going to settle and maybe just come out, time for travel is over, time to settle down?
No, like he had such a love of travel. Mm. So we travelled the world together, him and I. You know, we went on a round the world trip for a honeymoon. He had done loads. He's been to places that I'd never been before, you know. So, no, I thought that we would. I always said to him then when we spoke about children, I'd love to travel the world with kids. You know, you see people doing it every day of the week. So just somewhere along the way, we lost our way.
Okay.
With it.
When did he get married?
We got married in 2013.
Okay. Then when did the kids come along?
Dahi was born 2014.
Okay. Seeing the cracks then?
I saw the cracks from the get-go.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But you're young and in love. And
yes,
of course. You turn your blind eye to a lot of things, you know? So
when did you decide to move home to Ireland?
We had a 5-year plan in place after we got married. So we always, well, we both were teachers in schools over there. Mm-hmm. Schools are businesses in the Middle East. There's no real school ethos over there. You know, we grew up in rural Ireland and, you know, the country primary schools, it's a lovely way to go to school and experience. Over there, it's very different. So we kind of had both said, we saw how the system worked and we were there just for a pay packet, you know, like aside from, I had a love of teaching and I loved the kids that I taught. It wasn't an easy environment to be in, whether you're in the public system or the private system. There's a lot of cracks in schools over there and you see a lot that you would never see here and a lot to deal with and a lot that can't be said. And so we knew that we didn't want our kids in school over there. So we sort of set a 5-year plan in place. So we moved home in 2019. Kofla was 4 months old, my third little girl. My third little baby was 4 months old when we moved home. So, but, you know, on reflection and having the kids in school here now, I would say I would take all of that back because I think going to school in an international environment and having friends from all over the world, there's a lot to be said for that too, you know.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't know about you, Quiba, I didn't realise that you had had a miscarriage.
Yeah. Lost a baby, a silent miscarriage, actually. Yeah. So my body was still all the symptoms of being pregnant. And I went in for a scan because I was being extra monitored because of Tomas's heart condition, my second born. So I went in that day and I knew as soon as I saw the baby on the screen. So I was just short of 17 weeks when I found that out. And I had a choice then to go home and see if my body would do what it was supposed to do or I could book in to be induced to deliver. So I went home and booked it. It was 3 days later. So I was booked in for the induction. It's probably the closest I've come to experience in labour because you won't get an epidural for that, you know. So I went through the pain of all of that and it's... I had epidurals with my other four, so I feel like, you know, I didn't experience your full body contracting to deliver a baby, but I had to experience with that. But my mum advised me not to find out the sex of the baby. She knows me more than anyone. She knew mentally probably I would have struggled. So, but I've always had a feeling it was a girl, and I went to a psychic reader last year, and she sort of confirmed that for me. So,
and had you a name in your mind?
Yeah. I did, but I didn't. In the Middle East, it's all very, here at 17 weeks, you'll get to have the baby and bury the baby. But over there, they take it and it's managed.
Really? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But it's for the best. I feel like I don't know if I could have, I would have had to have managed it, but yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was where I was supposed to be in that moment in time and I'm a big believer in that, so.
I love your outlook. I think you're big into everything kind of...
Yeah, everything happens for a reason. So if something bad has happened in a day, I'm going to try and find the silver lining with this. There's a reason why I believe we cross paths with people. Everyone we cross paths with, we cross paths with them for a reason.
Definitely. Quiva, what kind of... Even chatting about that there now, how would you keep going?
The four kids, I have to. I get asked that every day on my page. That they don't know how I do it and they don't know how I keep going. If I don't do it, no one else will. You know, they need me. There's no one else there for them. And they give me the strength. They're amazing little humans. And I love being their mummy. So I love life as well, though, Brenda. I love life. I always have loved life. And back in secondary school, especially with the bullying and that, like, it can suck you into being like a really negative person. And jealousy is a horrible thing. And I think when women are jealous, it's even worse, you know. But I remember someone said something, instead of looking at someone and feeling jealous, look at that person and look what they've done. They've gotten themselves to where they are in life. And instead of having a negative feeling about it, turn that negative thought into a positive thought. And it's changed how I, you know, live my life. Like, it's admire someone instead of being jealous of them, admire them.
We were chatting there before we started recording, and you just mentioned Lisa O'Sullivan Shaw on my podcast, recent podcast, and we were just said briefly about, you know, mean girls, bitches rearing bitches, and it's so true. Like, there's no need to be so nasty, and I don't want to go down the road of people being nasty on Instagram, but you will see someone supporting the likes of Kim Kardashian before yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see your friends supporting Kim Kardashian, commenting on maybe a Skims post or something, or buying something from Skims rather than using your code for something. And that can be quite difficult to look at that.
Yeah, you just have to rise above it, I think. Yeah. You know, if you're going to be online, it's just the side of things that you have to manage, you know.
But I think as well, turn your envy into passion.
Yeah.
Rather than hating on someone, just going, okay, if you want that person's life, just go away and do something about it rather than hating on them. Tell me about how the Big Hill house.
Yeah, I always wanted to build a house.
Yeah.
A dream come true that I've managed to do it. And I love documenting life. Mm-hmm. And, oh gosh, giving up my financial independence was the hardest decision that I've made. And I've learned from it. And I am where I am today because of it, largely because of it. So it's something that I'll be instilling in my four. Never rely on anyone else for money. So I suppose I was left three small kids, knowing that I had to have some sort of an income for myself. And 6 years ago, you know, I was following the bloggers that are still doing so well today. And just started, I think. Never really knew, never thought it would lead to what I'm definitely doing now. It's my full-time job. I'm self-employed nearly 2 years now, and it's paying the bills. So,
and you've got
four children.
Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Then with all the, you're signed by Mandy.
Mandy. Yeah.
And you've got some amazing deals.
I have, yeah. Yeah.
I suppose looking back on your previous life, could you ever have imagined what you're doing now?
No, never.
Yeah.
Never. And I know it's not forever either. Mm-hmm. You know I have to have my head screwed on. I've worked really hard and I've built a really lovely platform there. I have very supportive women in my corner. I was at Croke Park on Sunday and I met six of them, came up to me at different times. And do you know, you don't realise, like, I feel like I'm just here winging it and surviving motherhood and everything that has come with that for me in the last 3 years. But so many women look to me and I think I give them hope.
Yeah.
And it's lovely. Like, I love what I've built on there, but I do need to be thinking of the future, and it's scary facing into the future with four kids to support. So,
yeah. I think as well, some people speak ill of social media, but like, for yourself and even for my own self, I find a great comfort in it. Those women who probably came up to you from when you were in Croke Park, many of them might have been confiding in you, going, I love your page, you don't know how much you probably helped me. I'm guessing so. They were those kind of women.
Yeah.
And when you hear that, what does that do for you?
Like, it reminds me that I'm doing okay. Because, you know, we question ourselves every day as well, despite how strong you may look online. Do you know, and there's days I want to fire the phone to the bottom of an ocean and never see it again. Yeah. There are days like that, you know, especially the last 3 years. It has not been easy being so accessible to an individual, but I'm still standing, I'm still here, and I'm still doing it, and I have to keep going with it.
And I must say, you were so accommodating to me coming all the way down from Tyrone. And as I said to you, I messaged you on Instagram and you replied to me. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe she even replied to me. Because you're so busy, so you're such a large following, and you were so committed to making today. And I just really admire that about you.
You're
so committed, and that's probably your engagement then with people. I think numbers and everything like that, but it's the engagement that really matters with followers. It really, really is. You mentioned there something about a certain individual, but there was a situation that went on last year which cost you a couple of brand deals, which you haven't really spoken to anyone about.
No.
You're willing about to speak about it today.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll leave you take the reins.
Yeah,
your story.
I refer to it as the defamation.
Yeah.
Probably the lowest point last year for me. It was really, really hard. I'd never experienced anything like it in my life. I went on a girls' trip to Nashville for my 40th. Didn't post about it online until I was getting on a flight in Nashville to come home again. And I uploaded 20 photographs off the trip. One of those photographs was of a person in Nashville holding a sign that he had written or wrote. And it was a play on the words from the song Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. And he changed the word cowboy to the N-word. Mm-hmm. But he was part of my Nashville experience. So the photograph was there. I didn't write the word. You have to give context to this. What was on that sign isn't something I endorse, you know. But we spoke to him every day, and he was a homeless man in Nashville. So I landed in Heathrow Airport, and a local business that I work with messaged me to say, Caoimhe, we've just received this email about this photograph. So she said, just delete the photograph. I said, okay, I'll delete the photograph. But every brand that I worked with over the course of the next 4 weeks received the same email. And it was this one email, it was a copy-paste email, and they were changing one paragraph in that email to tailored to the brand. So if it was makeup, his wife, you know, bought makeup. If it was jewellery, their wife shopped it in that jewellery shop. If they'd done their local shopping at a local supermarket and I'd tagged that supermarket, that's where they'd done their local shopping. So the pattern was very clear. But it just got to the point where it was getting out of control. And by week four, I lost a job that I was so proud to get. And it was something I really enjoyed working on. And I got to work with someone I really admire online. And then an emergency meeting was called. And to have to sit in a FaceTime Zoom meeting, you know, it was so embarrassing for me. And it was really hard to deal with. By week four, it was getting to the point where I didn't want to tag anyone, you know. And even if I'm not getting paid, I'll tag brands that I like. Or it got to the point where I didn't want to tag them because I knew that they'd get the email. So I wasn't sleeping then. Then the income was starting to be affected. And I screenshot one of the emails and sent it to my sister. And she rang me straight away and she said, Caoimhe, I feel sick. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, I've seen that name before. So we obviously knew it was a fake name. And I'd sent her one of the emails and she recognised the name. And I said, where have you seen it before? And she said, it was 2 years previous. That same name had been used to try and destroy her and her husband with something that was going on in their mm-hmm. lives. And then automatically we knew on that phone call who that person was. But it was out of my control.
Yeah.
So then I decided that I couldn't go into week five, and I addressed it without really addressing it on my page and on my stories. And the response that I had to that, it took the power away from what it was having. And then I was denominated from a lovely award that I was nominated for. That person had threatened to cause a media shitstorm if I was in attendance at those awards. And I just had to suck that one up. Receiving a barrister letter about something like that puts a lot in perspective. But I had a phone call with that person who owns that publication. And he said to me, you're never going to win against the internet with this one.
Oof.
And I just had to accept it. So I put on the gold dress that night and I watched a movie with the four kids. And really, Brenda, like, I'm still the winner sitting in all of that, you know?
Yeah.
And there has been so much done in the past 3 years that has tried to break me and tried to destroy me, but I feel like I've come out on top every single time.
That is classy.
Yeah.
That is, you know what that is? And one of my favourite sayings is Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah.
Because it's so true.
It is. So
I can't believe you put on the gold dress.
I put on the gold dress and we had our own. I'd hired the dress already, you see, for the event, so. But those photographs from that night, like, I smile at them, you know.
That is so empowering.
Yeah, And we watched a lovely movie called True Grit on Netflix, which is a really lovely movie and especially one to watch with the kids. But yeah, everything happens for a reason, Brenda. And you can't keep a good woman down.
And you know what the thing is? I've been to those kind of awards, and that those ones specifically, they can be so boring.
Oh, yeah, it's true. That he said it to him, the owner said it to himself. He said, you know, do you really need...
Yeah.
It was just the cancel culture nature of it.
Yeah.
Like, I have not done anything wrong. This is the situation that I'm in. This is who is doing this. This is... Mm-hmm. It was the power that one individual with one email had. That it is, that was the hardest part to sort of nearly comprehend. I could see through it, you know, like Ofcom, you know, you know, thousands of people will write in. This was one person. And that one person had such a well-worded ChatGPT email put together. And I can see, I had to take a step back and just look at it from a brand's perspective, you know. If I had a brand, but... What I learned was that I work with a lot of small businesses. I work with a lot of women-owned small businesses, and they all know what I've been through and what I'm going through. And they said that they seen through it straight away. And I love that. I got to see who is in my corner and who knows the person I am and who wants me representing their brand.
I suppose, do you look at the brands, some of the brands that dropped you in a different way? Now, you might have still worked with them since, but you can look at them...
I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, those brands, you know, to look at my page, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
They were informed of the situation and who it was and what was going on. But again, you just have to, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
And it's not, I can't control how a brand runs their business. So no, like I'm sad that I've lost, some of them will never book me again off the back of that. But... you know,
something better will always come.
Something better will always come.
And I would say, Caoimhe, the hardest thing, well, not even the hardest thing, I bet you didn't even go direct to that person and no contact. Like, you knew who it was, you couldn't, and you wouldn't have anyway. Like, that again is powerful.
We sent a cease and desist letter and that ended it. We had enough. We have enough. Mm-hmm. I have enough to go. And what is the point, Brenda? What is the point in trying to tear someone else down? Do you know, it's not who I am. It's not who I am.
It's not. So. And it doesn't help your energy.
No. And time and energy is so precious.
Yeah.
And I am spinning so many plates trying to keep so much going. And I have a lovely circle of people in my life. And I only give my time and energy to people that like want the best for me and who I want to spend time with.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
Do you see a lot of hope now in the future?
Yeah, you know, from the stories shared from women out the other side of it, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love my life. I have four beautiful, healthy children. My parents are still down the lane. And my house is our home and hopefully always will be. So it's scary, but yeah, I live in hope. I'm a dreamer. Yeah. Always have been.
I just think it's your energy, Caoimhe, even after everything you've been through. And I know you're going through things as well at the moment, but to even have that positivity, I can't imagine what's coming down the line for you, you know, in another couple of years.
Yeah, I think life's for living. And even through all the hard stuff, you know, there's always something to get up for in the morning. And it's about just finding those little glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
Because that's what gets me through, you know. Waking up in my bed, in my house, walking down the stairs, I don't take that for granted any day of the week, making my coffee, in peace, in the safety of my own home, you know.
And I know that you're big into always kind of dressing up.
Yes, it helps your mood and everything.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, and how you go about your day, and especially with Instagram being online, like I do a lot of organic content as well, so like any day I just have to jump on or I'll decide to jump on, and it's just nice to...
Do you show up on your Instagram every day, even the days you're like, oh God, I'm just not able today?
I'm very structured and routine with my page. I've probably taken a little step back. I feel like I've gotten it to a place now. But I've posted every day for the past 6 years nearly, aside unless we've lost someone in the family or I did come off a while in the initial days and months after the separation. But yeah, I show up every day near enough. Even if I'm not online, I'll still be posting.
What would you say to women who are listening to this and they're in, their marriage is just breaking down, they can't see a way out, they're like, you're a year or two ahead of them, what's the one thing you'd say to them?
And like, I could just be lying with the kids and there'll be a message come through, I've just left my husband this morning, I don't know what to do, how did you know it was time to leave? And I knew, but that choice was kind of taken away from me. Just don't give up hope, you know, yeah. Stay strong. And divorce, every divorce is different. That's what I've, every separation is different. Mm-hmm. Everybody's circumstances is different and can be in a really lonely place. Like, don't bottle it all up. Try and reach out. Like, women reach out to me and they have no one. They live away from their families and I'm like, there's paragraphs and I'll voice note back or I'll try and give some sort of advice or comfort. But so many are going through it. And you know, when it was me, it can feel like the only person.
Yeah.
And I was definitely made believe that I would have been the only person, you know, and then that makes you not want to talk about it online, or it's not something to be embarrassed about either. It's another. There was a lot of months where I would have been in my own head about that and things that had been said to me that no one would take me seriously and brands wouldn't want to work with me and who was going to want to work with a washed up mother of four, you know.
I was going to say, that was their level of embarrassment, that, oh look, my marriage failed.
I wouldn't say embarrassment. Like, I know that I gave it my all, mm-hmm. you know, and it was so sad. I'm still so sad.
Yeah.
You know, you're grieving. There's so much to deal with it, and I haven't dealt with it, any of it probably, because I've been in survival mode. It has been a really difficult 3 years. What has gone on didn't need to go on, you know, and I had to get up every day and show up for the four kids. So I wouldn't say embarrassment, but maybe a feeling like you failed, or
I think it's the fact that you wanted to give it your all. And
I didn't get married to get divorced.
Yeah.
I love love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, but it takes two people.
Yeah.
You have to have two people on the same page. And if you don't have two people on the same page, it's a waste of time, you know. And that's one of the first things I'll say to women who message me. Have you talked to him? Have you actually tried to talk to that person about this?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, you have two people in a marriage living completely separate lives and not talking. Communication has to be there, you know.
And I bet there's women opening up to you who haven't even probably opened up to their friends. Like, yeah. They're opening up to a stranger.
Yeah.
That's the power of Instagram as well and social media.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's easier to speak to a stranger as well, you know. And but it brings so much. It's such a lonely place to be, Brenda. Yeah. Really is. And only for Instagram.
Yeah.
And women sharing their stories with me and reaching out to me and being able to just chat. And then my own friends and the friends I've met later in life. My Instagram girls, as I call them. My Abu Dhabi girls. I have a couple of WhatsApp groups. And honestly, there's a lot to be said for a WhatsApp group.
I could see a sisterhood happening at the Canela Nights with yourself and Leslie.
Yeah.
Leslie is an amazing woman. She's after setting up a table for one, so getting singles together. She's down in Cork and she's a beautiful soul, but like, I could see, because she's going through a divorce as well, and that night something special was happening to the two of you because you're both in the same position.
Yeah, I had never met Leslie.
Yeah.
As she was telling the story, I didn't realise that she was in, we're a very similar story. And
very similar story, and it's moments like that. Yeah. And I think then even the way that she, there's a clip of the two of you and the way she thinks she kind of taps you on your arm, and it's just very beautiful. But like that, there's so many other women who are going to be listening to this. And why I do this podcast, Caoimhe, is for women and for anyone not to feel alone, to resonate. Because, and I said to you before we start recording, I hate speaking about myself on this podcast, but when I was in a really, really bad place like that, I thought I was the only alcoholic in the village. I thought I was the only one who wanted to drink the next year, going through what I was going through. And to hear that I wasn't alone, and people resonate with you.
Yeah.
There's so many women and men who are going to get so much comfort out of you. And as I said to you as well, people might say, oh, Caoimhe, yeah, she's got the beautiful house and she's stunning looking and all this. But when they hear the vulnerability,
yeah,
like I always say, vulnerability is victory.
Yeah.
Because once you open up, people see you in a different light. And I just think they resonate with you more and gives the person more substance.
Yeah.
You know, gives the person more substance. But you're like, you're an amazing, amazing person. I have three questions to ask you before we end. Okay, Caoimhe. Do you know what's funny actually? Do some people call you Caoimhe?
In the north, yeah. It's the northern Peninsula Station.
It's Caoimhe in the north.
Yeah. I actually grew up, mummy christened me Caoimhe, which is still the same spelling as Caoimhe.
Yeah.
But a nurse used to keep calling me Caoimhe and Caoimhe. So it really annoyed her. So she shortened Caoimhe to Caoimhe. And I hated it growing up. Yeah. Hated it, Caoimhe. People used to ask me what my name was, and I'm like, Caoimhe, and they're like, what? Like, it sounded like I was saying keys. And spell Caoimhe or Caoimhe. And then I went to college in Dublin, and it was Caoimhe. See my name and travelling. Mm. The best conversation starter.
Yeah.
Worldwide. And then my daughter's called Caoimhle, so I hope she has the same experience.
Do all your children have Irish names?
Yeah.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do they all mean?
Caoimhle means victorious sovereignty.
Stunning.
So like queen, she is the queen. She's my only girl. Dahi, Tomás and Paddy. They're named after the three O'Shea men in Kerry. I just loved watching Kerry football growing up.
I never knew that.
And I loved Dahi O'Shea on TV, like for the Rose of Tralee and everything. I just, yeah. So Dahi's named after him. And then, because I loved the name O'Shea at the end of it as well.
Yeah.
Dahi O'Shea, Tomás O'Shea and Paddy O'Shea.
Actually, when you're speaking about that, I could have seen you as the Dubai Rose or the Abu Dhabi, the Qatar Rose.
I was married already.
Oh, feck.
Yeah.
You'd be proper Rose material now.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. See, public speaking, Brenda and me. Ugh.
Are you sure?
Yeah, and like the girls that get up there are so confident. I'm not great at public. Like I was dying on stage last week at Canela Nights.
You were very vulnerable.
Yeah. But it's just, it's the setting and the fact you're speaking in a room full of people, public speaking. Like,
yeah. But I think, you know, as I said to you, I probably had this idea of you that you were going to be super confident on stage and you were just going to be like nearly like, oh, give me the mic, I'll talk here now.
Such a demand for me to do an event, like, you know, a big day out event or like have loads of women come and fashion and music or whatever. But the thought of me hosting an event like that, like, oh my God, I don't know what. I'd need a bit.
Well, what do you think it is? What do you think it is?
That public speaking. That's why I say yes to stuff like this. And that's why I say yes to being on stage for Canela. Just it's pushing me.
Yeah.
And with every push, I...
And you spoke so well now on this podcast.
You think so?
Absolutely.
I feel like I go off on tangents and stutter and can't get my words out. And
no, not at all. Plus, when you say you're going off on tangents, this is your story.
Yeah.
Caoimhle.
Yes.
Caoimhle to some. Mm. Caoimhle. If you could go back to your lowest moment and whisper one truth to yourself, what would it be?
Oh God, don't let this define you. This is not your full story. It's just a chapter.
Number two, what did rock bottom teach you that success never could?
Probably resilience. You know, it's easy to see what's going right when you're successful, but whenever shit hits the fan, who you are really shines through and what person you are. And resilience, I would say, has taught me.
And finally, what's the one message you'd give someone who feels like they're never going to make it out?
You will make it out and you will be happier. There's like, never give up on hope. There's always something to get up for in life every day. And just one day at a time, don't look too far forward and you'll get there.
No better way to finish up the podcast. Thank you so much for giving me your time and travelling all the way down to Dublin from County Tyrone.
Thanks for having me.